Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Sunday, readers of the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and Washington Post opened their papers yesterday to find full-page apology ads from Mark Zuckerberg, CEO of Facebook. The company relies on 1.4 billion users to interact with the platform daily, and Facebook's business model is, to say the least, right now tarnished. At a time when the cultural role of social media usage is under public review, the company is also still churning after the 2016 election, when news of Russian trolls and bots had many wondering about the integrity of their news feeds. And then the New York Times and Guardian broke news of a data privacy scandal on March 16th. The crisis, though, goes back to 2014, when an app developer harvested and sold Facebook user data to the political strategists at Cambridge Analytica. That data was used to tailor election messages and win votes. Facebook stock has plummeted, and if it seems the CEO, who took days to publicly respond to the crisis, is suddenly granting interviews and issuing apologies, it might be because he has good reason. Mark Zuckerberg lost $10 billion last week alone. Today, we talk about the Facebook and Cambridge Analytica data scandal. Later this hour, we welcome SDPB social media specialist Heather Benson to the program for tips on how you can dig into your Facebook settings to minimize your risk. Kent Osborne, host of SDPB's Tech Radio, joins Heather Benson in the studio for more perspective. But first, we welcome Joseph Bottom. He leads the Classics Institute at Dakota State University in Madison. He's one of the country's leading philosophers in the field of cyber ethics. Joseph Bottom, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
A lot of backstory to set things up so everybody's on the same page now, but let's start with what where you want to begin as far as, you know, what stood out the most to you as this, you know, data privacy crisis or scandal or news, depending on how you want to characterize it, unfolded.
Well, you know, it's coming at us in fits and starts and dribs and drabs. It's hard to get a picture of the whole thing when stories break in this way. But it seems, you know, you presented it fairly well. Someone noticed that if you could get people to agree to let you use their data, Facebook would allow you to reach out through that to other people's data, to their friends' data. And so he wrote an app that, you know, asked questions and was a fun little thing and opened people up in this way. Now, the figure that's bandied about is 50 million users, but it's not clear how many of those were Americans, how many of those were American voters, and how the data once sold could be used to target Americans who were actually going to vote in the election. In other words, we don't know at this point, and I'm not sure that we ever will know, what impact this had on the election. It may have had none. It may have had some. We just don't know. But what struck me as really interesting about this is its value as a symbolic issue. Mm. For just a perfect storm has come together to destroy Cambridge Analytica, which is going out of business as a result of this. The British police have raided their offices yesterday. And Facebook, which has lost so much of its value over the last week, you know, their stock price has just plummeted, as you said. And what it is a bunch of themes and worries in the American consciousness have all kind of attached themselves to this story. And it has high symbolic value, as well it ought, for the things that worry people are genuine things, regardless of the actual impact of this story, or these events. One of which is a sort of ongoing struggle among in the Democratic Party, among more left-leaning analysts and opinion writers, to try and understand how Hillary Clinton lost the last election. They're on the hunt for an explanation.
Sure.
And some of that energy has latched onto this story. There's the energy as well from the right, which looks at the general social liberalism of the high-tech Silicon Valley mavens and mistrusts them. And Mark Zuckerberg has you know, offered himself up in public, and now the worm has turned on him. And the third element is our general worry about how much we are exposed by our online activity. And this one, which I think is the most compelling, cuts across left-right distinctions. Everybody seems to be worried about this. And if poor Mark Zuckerberg, you know, is the occasion for us to finally have this discussion in public, then it's a shame for him, but he kind of, you know, set himself up for it by allowing this loophole in Facebook that allowed people to reach from everyone who agreed to share their data to all of their friends. And it is, after all, a worry that we all ought to have about how exposed we are and how much these large companies, you know, the five largest companies in the world are all involved with computers. How much of our data, how much of our news, how much of our information are we consigning to their peculiar hands?
So Mark Zuckerberg lost, as I said, $10 billion last week, but he's still the seventh richest man, I think, in the world. So he's still doing okay. So give me an idea, though, about, because he called this a major breach of trust. He apologized for it. He said, you know, in writing a three-step plan for how they were going to make sure this didn't happen again, certain things had already been done to fix it. I want to talk about the ethics of all of this. Did Facebook do enough, in your estimation, once they found out what was happening? And what do we expect them to do?
You know, these are very good questions. What do we expect them to do? There is no answer to that question yet. Cyber ethics is not a well-formed field. Law is a blunt instrument with which to try and deal with it. We're going to get laws out of this, and they're going to be hammering away at this instead of really the kind of precision that we need to understand it. But people are upset, and that's when you get laws of a certain kind. I'm not worried about those laws particularly, but I am worried that people simply don't understand that there is no such thing as free on the Internet. If you give Google your information to get a free Gmail account, they have something they can monetize, which is your information. There is no such thing as free. If you are not a customer buying something from them, then you are the product that they are selling.
But I think the general assumption is I will see ads in the sense when people sign up for something, it's not maybe they're not thinking it all the way through. But one of the initial thoughts is, well, these ads are going to come up on this website. And that's how Facebook is making their money. And people were surprised that, you know, to learn the depth of what happened and whether or not this was a breach of Facebook's actual terms of service.
Right. I mean, we first saw this in 2008. With the machine that Barack Obama's campaign put together. And they were the first to really reach out through social media and take advantage of all of it. One of the things that people don't realize is that advertisements don't pay the way. It used to be the case, and we still have this as a model in our minds, Lori, that, you know, the online world works the way television used to work, which is we throw this free content at you, but we pay for it by having people buy ads. This is what we expected with newspapers, that a large chunk, one of the reasons that newspapers were relatively cheap to buy on the street or to have a subscription to is because they had ads in them. And the ads were targeted toward the audience known to purchase that newspaper, typically a geographical audience. So you'd get ads for the local furniture store and ads for the local grocery store and so on. Now, that's targeted advertising. It's just targeted geographically instead of socially or by agreement on social issues or political issues. Now, the tools for targeting become much better, of course, with computerization, but it also is the case, Lori, that ads no longer pay the way. You cannot support yourself off of what Internet ads. You need some other targeted way of responding. I lived through the magazine world at the moment at which direct mailing started to fail. And and you could no longer get people to respond to it. In the same way, online advertising is collapsing. The value, the price that you pay for online advertising is so cheap, the return is so low for these companies that they need other sources of income. And one of the sources of income they have is all this data that they're sitting on, data that we freely gave them about our ages, about our searches. If you search on Google for ads about incontinence, or you search for the topic of incontinence on medical databases, you will start receiving advertisements from Google for incontinence medicine. Because you've sold them something. You've given them something in return for your free Gmail and your free Google search. And the same is true of Facebook. We've given them huge amounts of data, and we cannot expect them to sit on it when that data is so valuable. Now, they allowed somebody to get a hold of a good chunk of that data. To what effect, we don't know, but the very fact that they allowed it makes it certain, you know, reasonable to expect Mark Zuckerberg to squirm a little bit in public.
Google's stock also took a hit as people are sort of making these, you know, broader connections. But this notion of sort of profiling you based on your individual data and targeting you for everything from a grocery store mailer to election, you know, trying to win a vote, that's not unethical, is what you're saying. It's just part of the deal that we make.
Well, we need a way to opt out of the deal. It's unethical in the sense that we didn't know this for sure. I think anyone of any sense suspected it, and you ought to have suspected it when you buy a book from Amazon and you get mailings about books in that same genre. You have to expect that you've given them information and they're going to take advantage of that information. But generally speaking, I think the vast majority of people, kind of ordinary citizens, of whom I think better than some of the commentators in the Washington Post and the New York Times, who think that they're all sheep who were all, you know, directed how to vote by their Facebook feed, which I just don't believe. I think Americans are sort of smarter than that and wiser than that or better than that. But still, Lori, I think there's a gap between what we should have known and what we did. And only now are the two catching up with each other. This kind of information Facebook should have protected, but Facebook is using that information even if they're not giving it to other people.
So why are they in trouble then? If you know, what's the big deal? Why wouldn't it just be a quick public relations, you know, optics problem, and then they would move on? They're going to bring Mark Zuckerberg in front of Congress. Cambridge Analytica is being raided. Obviously, something here was beyond unethical. It was illegal.
Well, that's not clear yet. It's not clear at all that Zuckerberg did anything illegal.
Right.
Or that Facebook did anything illegal.
No, that's not quite what I mean, but there certainly is an investigation, a criminal investigation into Cambridge Analytica.
Well, as I said,
and how they used the data.
That's the perfect storm that is collected around all of this, which is, you know, there are a lot of threads that have all kind of wrapped themselves up in this particular story, and I'm glad to see it. I'm glad to see us finally worried in a way that we should be about the effects of social media and the just giving over of all of this information to people. But our first duty has to be to protect ourselves. And that means the first thing is just stop telling these people so much about yourself.
But if telling them about yourself is clicking a link on, you know, a friend's picture or a post, I mean, people don't want to stop that, the whole, right? I mean,
yeah, well, there you have the problem, Lori. And that's exactly where I was headed, which is, what do we do when we don't want to get off of these things? Now, I think Facebook is going to survive, although one of the interesting things about the computer revolution is how quickly some of these, you know, elements die off when they looked once insurmountably large. I mean, where is MySpace now? Snapchat lost an enormous amount of stock value when one of the Kardashians said it was sad that she didn't use it anymore. These things are more, because they are not bricks and mortar places, they don't have an actual physical product that they sell, they are vulnerable in ways that U.S. Steel was not when it was the largest corporation in the world, or AT&T when it was the largest corporation in the world. And, you know, Facebook could go away. MySpace, which was a rival, did.
So the FTC is investigating Facebook, and you mentioned that, you know, laws will come out of this. Do you anticipate certain things to look for, certain things that you believe should be changed, other than just, you know, we're allowed to opt out in an easier way or a more comprehensive way than we currently are?
Yes, I think one of the things we should do is have opt-in as the default option for everything instead of opt-out. That you should have to affirmatively agree at every step that your information can be harvested. We've seen this increasingly on websites. You notice when you go online and you read some article in a British newspaper or an American magazine, that a little notice will pop up saying, talking about cookies.
Mm-hmm.
That's increasingly an opt-in system, and I approve of opt-in systems as opposed to opt-out systems. I think you should have to affirmatively tell affirmatively that you want your information, or that you're allowing the information you give just by clicking to be harvested in some way. I think that one of the smartest things we could do is move ahead with antitrust analysis, the kind of thing that halted Microsoft back in the 1990s when it looked like it was going to take over the world. And I think we should probably break up some of these companies. Jeff Bezos is the richest man in the world by a large margin, especially now that Mark Zuckerberg and Peter Thiel and others have lost all this Facebook money. Amazon, it seems to me, is dangerously large and occupies a dangerously large space in public sales. And I think we could, you know, use our existing antitrust laws to break some of these up the way we broke up Standard Oil. And that would be a gain, because competition is perhaps the best way to bring about the kind of change that we want in a more subtle way than simply hard laws which are passed in anger.
And what about this notion between the difference between, you know, harvesting data and using it, you know, for micro-targeting versus using it for manipulation? Is that an area that needs to be explored, to say where is that line between just, you know, presenting a product versus manipulating a behavior and sometimes, you know, doing it in a dishonest way?
Well, you know, we've had these. I don't think there is a difference. Or if it's a difference, it's a difference without much distinction, Lori. But we've been, it's not like this is new. We've been having this discussion since the early days of advertising. On exactly what constitutes too much attempt to manipulate us into buying Chesterfield cigarettes or, you know, Coca-Cola or anything else. And, you know, we've been having this discussion for a long time. There's a reason that advertising executives had a bad reputation in America for a long time. There was a reason for that. It's because they were manipulating us, and we were worried about being manipulated. Now, I'm not sure what kind of distinction we're going to get between manipulating behavior and selling us, trying to get us to buy things, since, after all, buying is a behavior. It's the behavior that this was directed at. But it also means that, you know, the underlying this is something that ought to be doubly worrisome, which is the uses that can be made of the tools of analysis that we arrive at through all this stuff by totalitarian governments. And, you know, that's the final step here. It does us no good to say, well, Facebook can't do this if we allow if the Chinese government is showing everyone how government can do this.
Does this feel like a pivotal moment to you, or does it feel just like a blip that will go back to everything the way it was, the same challenges, the same behavior?
I think we're probably going back. There's going to be some exhaustion. Too much is invested in this story right now, and I don't think it can last. As I said, there are political elements to this story, and that anger at how, or that desperate energy to figure out how Donald Trump won the presidential election is going to latch on to some new target. Conservative distrust of Silicon Valley is going to latch on to some new target. Once the political energy goes out of this story, it will go on, and I think we'll see some laws passed. We'll see more groveling. We'll see perhaps more care. I certainly hope we'll see more care by the large data providers in terms of protecting our data. But the key element of this story is going to be, and the key takeaway is going to be, you and me watching to see how much of the lesson of this the American public actually take. And as I said, the real lesson here that everyone needs to understand at every moment is there is nothing free on the internet. If you're not buying something, then you are the thing being sold.
We'll leave it there. Dr. Joseph Bottom from Dakota State University, thank you so much for your time. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me.